I'm Jason Klom, and this is Comedy on Vinyl. The year is 1978. The album, A Wild and Crazy Guy, the artist Steve Martin. My guest this week is Arden Marine. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me, Jason.
So I'm a big fan, and what's so funny is like the whole time I know how to say your name, but I'm like, I'm gonna fuck it up. I'm gonna say more.
Everybody
say,
does.
But I know.
You knew. You almost looked offended when I always tell friends of mine, I'm like, it's Marine, and they're like, I know. But then when people see it written out, it's like an extra, that Y makes, because they know something's off and they think they're right, but then they panic. It's like a hurdle they panic on.
I have friends who get my last name wrong, and I will tell you, I am so used to hearing it, I recorded my own name wrong once.
Dude, when I talk to customer service or anything, I mean, I just don't even, you know, and close friends of mine get mad for me. They want me to have more esteem that I'm like, it's Arden Marine. And at this point, if your name is spelled differently than it's pronounced, and you're still uptight about it, you want to be unhappy. Like,
I
if I'm talking to customer, if I'm talking to Verizon or something, let's just make this expedited.
It
really doesn't matter if I'm like, it's Marine, like the Swedish Marine, like the drunk Viking, you know, who gives a shit? Who cares? What part of Chicago are you in, Jason?
I am in Los Angeles, California, actually.
Why did they say Chicago?
I have zero idea. You know, I went to Columbia College, Chicago. Maybe somebody picked up on that somewhere. I don't know.
I love Chicago. Well, did you have a nice time in Columbia College, Chicago?
I did. It was beautiful. It was. I just realized I have totally the wrong background for this, by the way.
I loved it. I love what's happening.
Me and Harry Waters Jr., who played Marvin Berry in Back to the Future.
I mean, I wasn't sure what was happening, but I felt like it was important to you, and I just thought, that's his background, and he's committed to that. Look, 2020, I am here, like, lowering the bar, just accepting, like, whatever your deal is that you need to get through 2020, whatever you need to do.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever background you need. Do your thing, chicken wing. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not judging you, Jason. Not today. Not on my watch. Not in my full face and makeup. Not in my full fake eyelashes, curled hair, and custom airbrushed Arden unicorn 4th of July America shirt. You think I'm going to judge you? I'm not judging anybody, Jason.
Good, because I look like shit. I mean, this is the first time I've worn a button up in 6 months.
2020 like, equals 2020 should be 2020. I look like shit. I mean, that's 2020. I will say, at first, as a lady in 2020, there was obviously terrifying, like in between hiding and terrifying.
Sure.
But as a lady who's made a large part of my living on camera, who I was like, oh, freedom, like never again. I am never, yes, I'm going to go grow my hair natural. I'm going to do, and then about mid-July, because I was a childhood redhead. I was like, it's going to come in. I'm going to be Anne Margaret. And it grew in so dishwater nothing, just so kind of like, just dusty blonde. And I could not, and I'm very, very COVID conscious, but I could not get like a visor and a mask and somebody in my yard fast enough. There was no amount of money that was too high to get somebody in like a garbage bag and like a hazmat suit to freaking have at my head. I couldn't take it. And I was like, I you win, Los Angeles.
Right.
I will succumb to your beauty standards. I felt like Smeagol taking a glance. It was not the like free hippie redheaded version of myself that I had anticipated.
That you were expecting, yeah.
Didn't happen. Yeah.
I mean, I'm using the excuse that I have a part coming up that's on a Zoom show that it requires facial hair, and I wasn't shaving anyway, but now it's because of a part.
Okay, are you on the NBC one? Are you in
that? No, I'm on nothing.
I love it. My brother has grown his second mustache of his life.
Oh.
And it's spotchy. We Marines don't have great patching of facial hair, but he's going for it. And I love that for him. I think this is your time to just make a move.
Agreed. Yeah. Should we? Okay. So this record.
Oh, my God.
You know, this podcast about records. The first person who picked this ever was actually Steve Franks, creator of Psych. So nice little Psych connection.
He picked the exact. I did two episodes.
You did. You're Andrea.
I played the stalker. One of my many stalker parts. I got a straight offer to play a stalker covered in barbecue sauce.
Fantastic.
And you know what?
Oh my God.
They picked the right gal. I stalked Corbin Burnson.
Mm-hmm.
Totally delight. Here's a fun fact before we get to Steve Martin. Fun fact about Corbin Burnson.
Mm-hmm.
GD delight.
Mm-hmm.
Fun, kind of kooky.
Mm-hmm.
Second world largest snow globe collection.
I've heard this.
And so here was the thing. He kept looking on French eBay for French. He has anything you could get in the U.S. Like that. Uh-huh. He's been there, done that. So now he's onto French eBay. He kept calling himself a pussy. He's like, I'm such a pussy. Loved it. And then he told me at the height of his fame. So we're talking like L.A. Was he on L.A. Law?
Is L.A. Law, right? Major League, yeah.
Okay, so he was saying that L.A. Law, Major League, he was complaining about, and I only did two episodes, so this is like, it's not like I hung out with him for 5 years. This is what I learned in two episodes.
Uh-huh.
Loved it. He told me, one, he's always been loyal to his wife. He loves his wife, and he's so pissed that he met her right before Major League came out because he could have had all of Charlie Sheen's cast-offs. Loved that. God. I've never seen Major League, but I loved that. That's whenever I hear Major League, I think he could have had Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen at his height, like pre, not hooker, like Charlie Sheen, or like what? Maybe great hooker. I don't know.
Maybe
number two,
Corbin
Burnson. I believe, and you might need to look this up because I don't want to be a liar on your podcast. I believe he was Sexiest Man Alive, People Magazine.
Probably.
And he told me like at his height, he was so into snow globes. This was way, way pre-internet. Mm-hmm. He used to put out ads in the Penny Saver, celebrity-seeking snow globes. And then he would go deep valley. So say here we are in like Calabasas or like Northridge, wherever. Pick your poison. We're up in Northridge. Fine. We're like.
Sure.
And he would go knock on. So it's the equivalent of like a Channing Tatum now, you know, an Orlando Bloom. Like who's, I don't know who the hottest man alive is.
I don't either.
Like Idris Elba. Like knocking. Like the current hottest dude out there knocking on the door at his prime of old ladies handing over their snow globes. You open it up. There's Orlando Bloom being like, give me your snow globes. And you know what? I will forever. And he has built a museum on his property in an old garage that houses his snow globes. And I will forever love Corbin Burnson for that. Because that's really
fair.
A nutty fact. That's nutty. And he was still doing it up in Vancouver 4 years ago. Like, it hadn't died. The itch has not been scratched, Jason.
You have just described the opening, I think, to some sort of Lifetime or Hallmark Christmas movie.
Yes.
Celebrity seeking snow globes.
Oh, my God. That's so good. There's, like, he's, like, a recent widow. So he's, like, seeking snow globes because his wife got, like, hit by a train. And like his heart's broken, but he's got like two daughters, one who's sassy and 13 and like, okay, dad. And then like one who's like a tomboy. He's like 8. And then he goes, he's filming maybe in a small town. He's like, ooh, small town Texas hasn't been picked over. And it's the equivalent. And then they act out the rest of like Hope Floats, the Harry Connick Jr. movie.
Sure.
And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay.
So that makes me happy that somebody else has picked this album. Here's what I want to say.
Yes.
I had never actually heard this album. I owned Wild and Crazy Guy.
Yes.
I had the Steve Martin Best Fishes poster on my wall.
Sure.
I had no supervision I had an older brother, and I saw everything. So I was going to pick the Eddie Murphy album, which was really what we listened to all the time. That was the album we listened to all the time. And you can't play that in 2020.
No.
But Steve Martin, I have to tell you, so he was it as far as movie stars and his comedy and like The Jerk, All of Me, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, Man with Two Brains. Like, we're talking like a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old. Like, and I've read his book. I've gotten to work with him. We'll get to that in a second. I did his play. I worked with him. I did the pre-Broadway run. I did the part that Amy Schumer won the Tony for.
Like
originated it. So I got to work with him.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It was amazing. And I have so many things to say about that.
Okay.
But like that era and having an older brother, like he, listening to this now, I want to say, I think a lot his jokes hold up. I felt like I laughed a lot. I found him, you know, did you read his book?
Yes. Yeah, I've read Born Standing Up.
It was interesting because I felt like it was so good. And I was like, the reason I picked this album and not that, because this was, I think, the last of, there was like three in a row. And I think this is the latest one. And part of me was like, and I saw that it was like an arena album. I mean, it was like when the crowd roars, it's, and I, reading that book, and when he was saying how it got to be too easy and not like, literally, it felt like an intimate show listening. And then there was a few things he did. And the roar, of the crowd. And I thought, I wonder if he's like 2 seconds away from quitting stand-up. Like, I was wondering like if this was, because he, like, you knew he didn't want to do King Tut. You knew he didn't want to do Wild and Crazy Guy. But he gave it to them. But I was like, his wordsmith, like the side of him that grew up loving magic and like the precision, his persona, like his smart, dumb thing. I felt, I laughed hard. I listened to it twice this week to get ready for you. I really felt like his young, innocent character with this really smart, like all of his jokes are so smart and the twists and the turns, but it's relatable. He's not snotty. He's not a snotty intellectual on stage. I felt like it held up. Jason, what did you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, of course. It's been a while since I had heard it, and again, it's also one of those things that it has been picked now 5 times, which is
low. Are you serious?
Yeah, but here's the thing: the other one I'm looking at, which is Let's Get Small, has been picked probably close to 10. You know, like it's hard. If you talk to people anywhere between, you know, this age and that age, it's always either Steve Martin or George Carlin or Eddie Murphy. Or there's just a few things people are just going to keep picking over and over again. But yes, I love this album. It's worth re-listening to because I didn't grow up with this one. I grew up with Let's Get Small.
I didn't grow up with this one either, and I have to say. And I was interesting listening to how the 2-year-old, first of all, who brings a 2-year-old to a comedy show? And I was thinking, again, reading his book and knowing, like, this is now a New Yorker writer. This is sort of a quiet, intellectual guy. This is a smart guy. I'm going to ask you this question.
Yeah.
And I've done stand-up where people have brought toddlers, and it's a buzzkill, like, and it's distracting. It's crazy because a toddler is really cute, really small, and really should not be in an adult alcohol-filled late-night comedy show.
No.
When that toddler stepped on his French set, the setup, and then he had to do it again, and he knew this was the recording, he knew this was the album night.
Yeah.
How enraged do you think he was, Jason?
It's so hard to say. He seems like a guy. Well, he obviously lets it roll off his back. And I had to double check, by the way, and pull it up on my phone. I had forgotten that this was the one that I didn't know when Steve Franks picked it. Side one of the album is, yes, it's a club. It's a club night. Side two, the reason you start to. Yeah. Just it's meant to reflect.
It's two different nights.
It's also meant to throw you, I think. Wow. But yeah, the baby thing.
It was two different venues.
Right, yeah.
So they chose that. They could have chosen that from a different.
Yeah.
They could have chosen that from a different night, a different set. They picked
that.
I also
wouldn't put it past him to set that whole thing up.
No.
Necessarily. But he probably didn't.
I mean, it was interesting reading his book, how it's also like maybe at that point you're such a surgeon, you know you're going to kill. So maybe the challenge of how am I going to play with this, like. How he immediately went to 2 lesbians walk into a bar, like when he was like so smart, so fast.
Yeah.
That maybe it was fun. Like maybe he was so famous and it was a fun challenge to actually now like now this is an obstacle. You know, it's maybe woke him up.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, I guess it's at a certain level, all stand up is going to be a challenge and a pain in the ass. I want to get through this fucking thing. I want to make sure I can do this.
Yes.
Like, can I keep doing this? And then, yeah, you're right. At a certain point, it's like, let's try this out. Maybe see if I can function.
I loved his stuff about the author, his books coming out, how I turned $1 million in real estate into $25 cash. Just all of like, and his, just the character, like the that he was always Steve Martin. In everything that he did, and yet and it was a heightened character.
Sure.
But there was still so much humanity, even though there wasn't a ton of intimacy. Like, you don't actually get to know much about him.
No.
But that you feel like he's your friend. It was interesting working with him. So I worked with him. It was actually, now, and the reason I know this It was 4 years ago because I remember I remember Trump won while we were doing the play. Like, you know what I mean?
So
we were, oh my God.
I was That's like saying Macbeth.
I know, exactly. I was like, wait, what? So I remember, it doesn't feel like that long ago, but it was 4 years ago.
Sure.
And I will say he's like one of top five. I mean, you know, I feel like Bill Murray, you know, of like living. I was offered a movie with John Cleese that I couldn't do during COVID.
Oh, really?
That was a tough one. That was different protocols, not in the United States. They were like testing. I can't.
No.
And that part was like, what if I kill John Cleese?
Yeah, right?
Do you know what I mean? Like, I could. That's valid. I got to fly somewhere. Sure. I could. Maybe I would have been fine, but I can't. I can't kill John Cleese. Anyway.
No.
Okay, so here was my. Jason, I'm a huge pop culture fan. I grew up in a teeny tiny town. Mm-hmm. I'm a super fan of things, and I have social anxiety. People make me nervous. I'm okay in a situation like this. This is like I can have a conversation with people, but
same.
I get nervous. I get nervous in groups of people I don't know. I get nervous in new settings.
Yep.
I can fake it well. I don't appear that way, but I get nervous. I was terrified because I also knew he was quiet. I knew he was classy. I knew he didn't swear. I'd heard he didn't swear. And
interesting.
I didn't get through a meal. It was bad. I panicked and swore. here's what was my first impression. Because he went white so young, he looks just like Steve Martin. He looks exactly the same. He looks just like Steve Martin. Like up close, you can see there's a thin, like almost like a tiniest of like hearing thing, but like other than that, his face and his hair, like he looks just exactly like Steve Martin always looked.
Right. It's different. Like if you meet somebody who's clearly aged, like John Cleese, who you almost murdered, would be a very different thing.
That was a bucket list: is murder John Cleese.
Murder John Cleese, but you didn't get to do it yet.
You know what? Not yet. the year's not over, Jason.
It's true. At the end of the day, it is different when somebody hasn't really, like, the big thing is, like, hair changes or blah, blah, blah. But, like, he's the same dude. It's very weird.
He's the same dude. And it was interesting. There was a moment he was in rehearsals and stuff. It was a four-person play. And there was a moment where there was a scene and it just wasn't quite hitting as he wanted it to, and then he stepped in and I got to like rehearse opposite Steve Martin. Oof. And it was as if it was interesting watching this very gentlemanly, sweet, quiet man turn on the Steve Martin machine. And it was like, I actually have a video of it, like, and it was like all of a sudden, because it was sort of a broad moment in the script, and he became Steve Martin. He became every character that he ever played. And it was fascinating just to see like a flip switched just. And it was just like he turned it on and it was such a delight and he nailed it because it was so interesting. But he was sort of, you know, I've always been a night owl. To the point where I had to go to like the Yale Sleep Clinic. Like I just have like a reverse cycle. And my brother, we're all like very nocturnal creatures except for my mom. And she just gave in and let my brother and I stay up. And so we would, and my mom would show people would just show me from a very young age things I shouldn't be watching, but were great. Like all these Monty Python things. Gilda Radner, Lily Tomlin, and then also like Mel Brooks stuff with Madeline Kahn, and then, you know, Young Frankenstein and like Terry Garr and Cloris Leachman. Like there was all these really fun female comedian character with these great parts. Like there were these great parts. And there was almost like an old-fashioned quality to all of, like, there was something, a lot of them felt almost even retro for the time.
Sure.
And almost like a 1940s, like, movie musical dame. Like, there was something, like, about watching these adults that were also slightly heightened and silly, but there was a sweetness to them. I that's what I want to do. I want to do what they're doing.
What was the first Steve Martin thing you ever saw?
The Jerk.
Had to be. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
I was six. In the theater. Maybe I was four. It might have been four. I know. I look back now. I'm like, there was rated R. There's like blowjob jokes. What year did I might have even been younger. I might have been three.
That's so funny.
I have to see what year it came out.
You know, my parents wouldn't let me watch violence in movies. Understandable. But they were fine with, you know, boobs and sex. They
oh, my God.
Really
I saw
care,
so many so boobs.
Yeah.
I feel like there was no kids' movies when we were growing up. It was like cartoons, right. And then you just go see tits. Truly. I mean, it was like, I saw so many tits. It was just mm-hmm. a given. It was like,
yeah.
Like, every, I mean, Trading Spaces, like Jamie Lee Curtis.
I love that movie so much. But
oh my
yeah.
God. I mean, okay, wait, The Jerk, what year did it come out? Let's see.
Was it 80?
79.
No, really? 79? Okay, a year
and it was
the,
it was okay. December 79.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I don't think I was even in first grade. Like, I okay. should not yeah. have been at The Jerk.
No.
And
no.
yet, I knew it was funny. Like, I mm-hmm. knew, I knew that Navin. Mm-hmm. It was funny. And yeah. how he walked and like the thermos, like all, it was almost like a Bugs Bunny character where adults like it, but kids mm-hmm. like, I just want my thermos and like him. It was just, and the love scene with he and Bernadette Peters and pizza in a cup and the trumpet and like, I know. And Shithead the dog. I mean, I knew Shithead the dog was funny as a kindergartner.
Sure.
It's funny.
Of course you did. Yeah,
I mean, are you telling me that's not funny? What do you think, I'm garbage, Jason? I'm some garbage. Yeah, it was. What did other people say? The other seven people who picked this, what was their take?
I mean, they pick it because it's something they grew up with, and usually there's a variety of there's a real like with me a real range a spectrum of how articulate can you be about something you grew up with?
Yeah.
Versus like how inarticulate because it's just a part of you.
Yeah.
So you've got. The thing we all have, Steve Martin is a part of you, but you have the advantage that you just listened to it. I like that you just picked it. You know, I once had a guest come on here who I didn't realize had never heard a comedy album before I sent her Lily Tomlin's Modern Scream. And so
wow.
just by accident, my friend had listened to her first comedy album. I'm like, that's
oh,
a
so
nice,
she was like so
thing.
Excited.
Yeah.
I
you
wanted
know,
to
she was
pick
honest
some,
about it.
I wanted to pick something like, I will say, and not to be a total hooker, but I did have a book just come out 2 weeks ago.
Well, that's sure.
Called Little Miss Little Compton. Uh-huh. And it's been interesting promoting it. I just did Mike Kaplan's podcast, and I was talking mm-hmm. about how my parents moved from Manhattan to this town called Little Compton. And it's mm-hmm. got literally, it's 3,000 people. There's no stoplights. The only store is an old-fashioned general store. The coffee mm-hmm. shop is in a barn and an apple orchard. We're talking... It's literally that small. There's yeah. no mayor.
I can relate. It's, sure.
Okay. So it was all like my mom wanted my brother and I to be able to use our imaginations and just make things and just mm-hmm. like and just we were not over programmed. It was just really just daydreaming, making things and playing. It was all just playing make believe and making things. Mm-hmm. And Mike pointed out, it never occurred to me, but just he was like, you know, I was saying how much he asked what I liked to do as a hobby that was not like as a kid. I was like, I loved just to play store and play office and play. He was like, yeah, because there were no stores near you. Yep. Like yep. there was no mall. There you everything that you had to like you couldn't just go to a store. You had to sure. pretend there were you'd sell the rocks some twigs from outside. And I mm-hmm. think there was something about the main thing I consumed because it could come into my home because I didn't need to go to a store to get it, even though we only had three channels. Like
yeah.
was pop culture and sure. like and that was just, you know, I remember even listening to like Tom Lehrer albums like of mm-hmm. what my like just whatever my it was basically whatever my older brother or my parents were playing and like
right.
I think people with older siblings, it's a real gift because
yeah.
you're exposed way too young to things. But like you
it's a
know,
common story on this show, by the way. So
interesting.
Often, if
that's
it's
interesting.
Not if it's not in the parents' cupboard, it's an older brother or sister that's like, just listen to this.
It was truly my brother. Like I remember, I got taken to see Meaning of Life mm-hmm. in the theater, probably age 5 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Holy.
Like,
shit.
Like you know, we like. I mean, that's a dark. But even then, it was a little bit scary. But I
sure.
knew Mr. Creosote was funny.
Sure.
How you doing? Better. Get a bucket. I think I'm gonna puke. Like I, you know. All of that, like you just, I appreciate that there was really no, they just treated me like a tiny adult with
yeah.
a good sense of humor.
Yeah, they, right.
Yeah, and it was Mel Brooks, it was Monty Python, it was mm-hmm. Steve Martin, Woody Allen, who I got, it was my first movie. I got to work with Woody Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's that.
That is that. We're going to circle back to that movie, but not to Woody Allen in a minute. Great. If that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure.
Can we? Okay, so here's the thing. I did ask them to send me your book, but they didn't get to send it to me. But I heard you read or talk about bits of it on Comedy Bang Bang. I have to ask you, have you ever seen the show News Radio?
Yes.
Okay. The character of Bill McNeil, one of the running gags.
Who played Bill?
Phil Hartman.
Great.
His character, there's a running gag that just the shit that his family would put him through, but also just the weirdness. He has an obsession with rotten old sandwiches.
Yes.
Okay. And they're like mom used to make. She'd make them and put them, 2 months at a time, put them out on the porch for us to eat.
When I heard you talk about,
I'm like, holy fuck, her life. This is why I have to read your book, because your life does not seem possible.
I mean, it's so funny because everybody, even like close friends of mine, mm-hmm. I will get texts. They're like, this is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, I feel fairly well. Like, I just took it all as average. I'll get you a book. I'll get your address at the end.
Nice of you. Thank you. That's very kind of you.
It is, my dad was obsessed with his weight.
Uh-huh.
And he was always on a diet. He was always on a diet. And by the way, I don't think he ever drank a glass of water in his entire life. No. It was like Tab or caffeine-free Diet Coke. I mean, this is the most unhealthy man you've ever met in your entire life.
Uh-huh.
So he had like a cooler that he would like carry. He had like a man soda purse. It was like a round soda purse. It had a cover for it, that my mother's soda cover for this cooler of Tab that he would carry everywhere. But he loved to age food. So he would basically every morning he would make a bologna and mustard and iceberg lettuce sandwich, and he would like crunch up the iceberg lettuce with his dirty hands. My brother and I as adults realized neither of our parents ever taught us to wash our hands. And then my brother has confirmed that he went once into like the men's room, used urinals, and like that zipped up and out he went. And my brother was like, that's confirmed. That's as I thought, and that is accurate. So he would crush up iceberg lettuce. Mm-hmm. All the germaphobes out there, we've just lost them. Then he would take the sandwich, place it on top of the refrigerator, and he would age it. Like, so it would get kind of crusty, but like a Quiznos thing. We had a toaster.
Right.
But he would age it, and then he would take it up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like all he would eat. And then I found an old rusty hammer one day out on the counter, and I put it away. Because it's like, why?
Like
you don't
you
need
do.
A rusty hammer. In the,
no.
And then hours later, I heard, God damn it! Who moved my cookie hammer? And we're like, what? He was like, who moved my cookie hammer? Jason, this is his own method. He'd been buying at the ice cream parlor, like snickerdoodles the size of like a dinner plate, huge cookies, huge local ice cream parlor cookies. But he didn't want to eat them so fast because then you're going to gain weight. It's all about the weight.
Of course.
And he would age them, and he would make them be so hard that you couldn't possibly bite into them.
Of course not.
And so, that's the goal. You want it to get to the point where it's so hard that you can't just take a bite because it'll like break your tooth. So he would have to then take his cookie hammer, it's just an old, rusty, disgusting hammer.
Sure.
And he would smash it. And then he would take the cookie pieces. And then he would always have like tea. The other thing he would drink would be like caffeine-free Lipton tea with like 88 Splenda packets in it. Okay. So it's like 88 Splenda packets, a caffeine free tea, and then he would dunk it almost like a fucked up biscotti. Like the world's worst biscotti.
Yeah.
And then he would like suck down, like, because it would make him enjoy it longer.
Sure.
Because you can't bite it. And that's my dad had the cookie hammer, Jason.
Your father ran away from the cradle of modern civilization so that he could act like a toddler in a small town where no one would judge him, is what like to me.
That's the elevator pitch.
Yeah, right?
That's the elevator pitch. That's exactly right. And he was shaped like a toddler. And he would float every day. He would body surf every day in the ocean. And like, the lifeguards would let him go farther out, like way out near the buoys, farther than anybody else, because he was so buoyant. Mm-hmm. He literally, there's a photo in the book where he would put his hands behind his head and like cross his ankles and just like, he was like a retirement age sea otter that would just like take a nap at sea. He was so buoyant and he would just float. He would just, I don't think he actually exerted himself remote. It was, he would just like float out to sea and like at the end of the, like, you know, the lifeguard day, they would go get Mr. Marine, bring him back in. And like, that was my dad.
Oh, that's so good.
And he had he had vanity plates. He had drove a Mazda Miata, a candy apple red Mazda Miata with vanity plates. He was a certified public accountant and the vanity plates said Rhode Island CPA 2.
Two.
He was not the number first. One. Somebody else got it. And he had CPA 2 Mazda Miata. Oh. That was my dad with his man purse and his hammer taking naps at sea.
If that's not enough of a reason to read that book, I can't make another argument for it. I mean,
can I just tell you? And my parents married on a dare. My parents literally never went on one date. They got married on a dare.
Uh-huh.
And they stayed married for 50 years.
50 years.
I mean, 50 years. There you go. Buy the book, everybody. Buy the book.
Come on.
And I talk about kicking Courtney Cox in the face. There you go. You got Hollywood. That's you got amazing. Small town. You've got everything.
You've got everything. So I actually looked it up for a split second. You and I were talking about two different movies. I'd forgotten Deconstructing Harry was on your list. But can we talk about one of my favorite movies of all time?
Let me guess. Bubble Boy?
No.
Your face just went to a B. Yeah.
The Imposters.
Oh, that was one of my first movies.
Yeah.
One of my first movies. Mm-hmm. It was so fun to be dressed like 1920s.
Of course.
I was 21. It was one of my first jobs. I think I just got my SAG card. And just like, that was also like at the height of like Oliver Pratt. And the Tooch. Are you kidding me? The Tooch. The sets. I feel like now, again, looking back, because it was all so brand new. I mean, I was just in New York. I mean, it was like brand new in the city.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, it was like somewhere in like Long Island City. But it was an old hospital that they'd built. This old hospital, they'd constructed these beautiful old sets. Mm-hmm. These beautiful, like the ocean liner. It was just beautiful. And the woman who, they marceled my hair. Mm-hmm. And it literally felt like it was in New York. In New York, you really get some old school hair and makeup, like you get teamsters. I felt like this one. I remember she was like, her waist was like this wide and she was chewing gum, and I felt like she had marceled her own hair in the 20s. She just whipped it out. She must have been 190. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. And there was something about like that, those New York crews. It was so thrilling.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'd forgotten you were in that, if only because everybody who's in that just sort of stand. Everybody kind of gets a moment, even almost down to the extras. Like, everybody's just so clear and they get a moment in the movie.
So Charles Stanley, too. Dana Ivey, I mean, Hope Davis, so good.
Oh, my God. Had such a crush on her from that movie.
Are you kidding? What was that movie that made her a star? Wonder, what was that?
I'm for shit with naming anything other than
There Impostors. Was a movie that made her a star. I remember they played a lot of like bossa nova in it.
Now I kind of know what you're talking about.
I believe it was one word. I think it began with a W, and it was right before, it was like right before The Imposters. And she was like the equivalent of like more serious, but she was like the Parker Posey New York indie film darling. So good. That Hal Hartman era.
Yeah. Holy cow. How many days were you on that film? I'm not going to harp about this movie, but it's one of my favorites.
I think like two days. It was just like, because this was like one of my first, it felt, you know what was so fun about it? From growing up in a small town with a movie, with a TV channel that we didn't get cable until just recently. So like a lot of the movies I watched, my dream was to be like a cigarette girl at the Rainbow Room. Like I wanted to like shuffle off to Buffalo and be like, you know, just, I wanted to be like a Busby Berkeley, you know? And so to actually be on a set that looked, it was how I pictured it as a little girl in a small town with like limited access to things.
Yeah, that's so
it
good.
It felt, you know, and there's something so fun. I started in New York, and I still to this day, there's something so magical about being on a set in New York.
I bet.
Because the rest of New York, they're all doing everything else. Like, it's sure. not just, it's not a one horse town. So it's sure, so yeah. cool to like, oh my, like just to be aware that you're on a movie set in New York. It never, it's always so exciting to me.
Yeah. I would recommend everybody watch that movie. It's so a great good. Movie. Also, I'd forgotten for a minute, Michael Emerson, that's one of his first movies too, if I'm not mistaken. There's a lot of people who, it's like their first.
Was that after Big Night? I think it was, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, Big Night was a year or two before this.
I mean, he's had a very cool career.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Tucci.
I love Stanley Tucci so much.
Oh, my God.
My dream. That's my dream interview. I'll stop the fucking podcast if I get to interview him or Mel Brooks.
I think you should try. Oh, you should. I know. I have a friend who's working with Mel Brooks. Loves mm-hmm. him. Loves yeah. him.
He's a fucking gem. He's a goddamn gem.
I love that his best friend that they would watch Jeopardy every night.
I know. It's the cutest thing that I've ever heard in my life.
That killed me. Yeah. I loved it. I loved it. And I love that Anne Bancroft, every night when he came home, mm-hmm. she wanted to look her best, like, just because she just adored him. Like, you know what I mean? That's like, so she never stopped wanting to be his girlfriend. Like, just not in a gross old-fashioned way, but just like the cutest.
Yeah.
Because she was such a babe, you know? And mm-hmm. like, that she forever was like, here he comes. Like, all right. Mm-hmm. Like, and she put a little razzle-dazzle into it. Yeah. How sweet is that?
It's fucking cute.
It's cute. Really cute.
When that movie gets made, you're not going to find anybody who can play either of those people well enough. It'll never happen.
No.
It'll never happen. They're too. No.
It'll be disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It'll be disappointing. I'm trying to think of like who it could. Now my brain is.
I know, right? Yeah.
Is Michelle Williams like talented enough to change her face and make it happen?
Right.
Like, you know, some people are like good enough actors that they can just mm-hmm. do it, but like, it's not who you want. Somebody who's a bit of a dame, you know. You want sure. somebody who's Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah.
At a young age, a yes, young
right.
like that's
we
the
often
thing.
Forget how young she is.
Like a year older than you know, like Dustin Hoffman.
So fucking funny.
And like so hot, the yeah. best.
I mean, come on.
Come on.
I'm gonna switch gears back to Steve Martin for this reason.
Love it.
What do you do? Do you have to turn off a switch when you're working with him, or do you actively try and like live in the moment of working with a man who you grew up with?
I'll be honest with you, because I feel like we're wired similarly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will tell you this: the scariest thing for me, and it surprised me because I would have been so jealous. I had to call like my best friends the first week, and again, it was a 4-person play. Mm-hmm. The first week. The theater was like, Steve would like to take the cast out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if it was anybody else, I would be so jealous.
Sure.
I was so terrified of sitting and eating, like, with food in an elegant restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, not dropping food. What do you order? Like, mm-hmm. eating in front of Steve Martin at a fine dining establishment.
Mm-hmm. Afraid you might ask him where does the cookie hammer go?
Yeah, I don't know. Where, I don't understand. Why are you not eating with a hammer, Steve? I don't get it. And knowing that he was kind of quiet and sure. being a super fan, that was the hardest part. Mm-hmm. I will say for me, what was I will tell you this, which was a thrill. What was really fun, I've done a few plays and mm-hmm. I've always gone in. It's actually gotten better, like, when I did some when I was younger, and I felt very self-conscious that I hadn't gone to, like, Juilliard, and I didn't go to Yale, like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I booked the part, you know? But I remember feeling there's such a hierarchy in New York theater that I mm-hmm. felt, like, ashamed. And then I have to say, like, once I became, like, a headlining stand-up, and it was like, well, if I can be alone on stage for an hour and deal with like drunk people at, like on a Friday late show in like
yeah,
Houston,
yeah.
you know, I can be on your like it actually like having done plays then again more recently, mm-hmm. I actually went back with like, no, I'm not. You know what? You can keep your Juilliard. You can keep your Yale. Like, yeah. this is harder than that. I'm sorry. But like.
Yeah.
And in order to be a good stand-up, you have to be able to listen. You have to be able – you're having – you can't just talk at a crowd for an hour. Even if you're not doing crowd – like, it has to be some kind of, like, an interaction or people are just going to check out. So it actually, I feel like, helped me go back with more confidence.
Okay.
And so it was interesting. And I'd also come from, like, you know, early on, I did a lot of multicam sitcoms and stuff like that. And so I made, but I've always gone in somewhat insecure with plays, feeling not that New York training. So I make sure that I am way off book before day one. And it was, so it was a play of four people. It was called Meteor Shower. It was the part that Amy Schumer played. And basically, I didn't leave the stage except for one scene in the entire play.
Wow.
It's like,
okay.
So it, I was in every, I was on stage for like 2 hours. So I made sure I came in off book. I'd read his book twice. I made sure I came in word perfect in that I knew this was not a riff it kind of paraphrase guy. This is a comedian that is a precise mathematician, magician. Like you read that book, he's a surgeon. This is everything is for a reason. And it's like the math and the timing of it. So I made sure that I had a friend that I hired for weeks that would drill me, and I was allowed like no error.
It's amazing.
So that I think for me going in, it actually made me able to, the actual rehearsal part was a joy. The actual rehearsal part, because I actually felt, and I'm not, I don't want to sound like a dick, but I think some of the other more theatery people, like, I felt like he and I spoke the same language. I knew what he was talking about. I also understood. I remember one time somebody asked him, like, well, why did you pick the eggplant for that line? And he's like, because eggplants are funny. And I thought, yeah, eggplants are funny. Like, like the, like, you know, and like everybody else during the, I was like, but what? And it's like, and I, and to me, I'm like, that's a perfectly acceptable answer. I don't need to know why. I just need to know that it's the eggplant. I need to know how to hit it. And like, but that's was how, that's the, I approach it like that. And I think other people are like, but I need to know the subtext. And so for me, that part was, it was really fun to get to play. It's almost the only sport I ever played was tennis. And I was not great, but I was okay. I was okay. And it felt like getting to play against the world's greatest tennis player. You know what I mean? Like it felt so fun, and to know that like I came in prepared, I came in ready to play. I came in ready to be, have somebody give me adjustments. And I felt like he's like, I felt like he respected me, and that, so that felt, I felt proud that I was able to come in. And and I actually honestly think that like sitcoms and stand up and like that kind of training served me in that particular theater experience in a way that enabled me to go like peer to peer, go I wanted to do, I wanted to be of service to his text, because I understood how his, like I understood the music of it rather than like why it's like, because it's, this is music, like I'm hitting I need to hit the like the setup and the joke. I, it has to be believable, and you have to have like the subtext and stuff like that, but I know ultimately it was a comedy, and you better be getting the setups and you better be hitting the jokes. So it was fun.
That's amazing.
I would get nervous in between, like on the breaks. So I would try to act casual. My main thing I just kept saying to myself is like, just don't act like it's Steve Martin. Just like act, don't do, and don't fan out at all. Ask what he did that weekend. Talk about his dog or like whatever. Like just never acknowledge that he's super famous. Like, and that was the only, that seemed to be the only way to get through
That's the only way you could do it. And from what I'm told, like he's one, well, he might be, but like Christopher Guest, I'm told, is that way as well. Right. Like, just like, do not, don't fucking, don't yank his crank. Just talk to him, be a person with him. And I've never used the phrase yank his crank in my life. And
but
I'm
liked
sorry
it. That actually made sense.
Sounded gross, but you know what I meant.
I did. I felt, it's, there's some people, it's interesting. There's certain people that are so famous. Like I remember I got to work with Diane Keaton and Harrison Ford.
God, Jesus Christ. Okay.
And I didn't have a big part, but it was like for like 2 weeks. Okay. But so and I was like in a room. It was in Morning Glory. And the whole time, the subtext in my brain is always just be cool, be cool, just be cool, or just be cool. And I could, she was so fun, and she was so Diane Keaton. She's so exactly as you would want her to be, like playing the part of Diane Keaton as Diane Keaton. Like she's so, she comes in gloves, hat, button down, vest. Like she's full. It's like, oh, here comes Annie Hall. Like, okay.
Holy shit.
And like, he's very sweet, but he's so, like, he's not giving it away for free. Like he's quiet.
Yeah.
So I can be like, there's Indiana Jones, there's Han Solo. Like, come on. That one I could never fool. He was too cool for me. Like, yeah. I'm too high strung. I'm not a stoner. I'm not cool. Sure. Like,
all right, okay. Yeah.
Like, I'm just not mellow. And yeah. he's quiet. And there's also sometimes in scenes, like, I know Nicole Sullivan, who's also on Mad TV, we're not on the same time, but we were doing, like, sometimes you'll work with, like, really, really good movie stars. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how we're both, like, we know how to, like, and it's like, when you're with, like, real, they're so fucking quiet. So you're like, and it's like almost like the clown that snuck into the fancy party, and you're like, and you literally can't hear them, and you're just like trying to calm yourself down, and then you're just like, is it my turn to talk? Because they're so quiet. But then when you watch it back, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. It's like the mumble actors, like it reads really well on film.
They
you know?
Force you to listen, man. Like, they make you do the work.
But you literally are like. Like, my voice is too high, my energy's too amped up, I'm too anxious, you know, and I'm like...
Yeah, I now can't picture that scene. I can't picture the two of you in a room together. That is very funny.
Me and Harrison Ford?
Yeah, no, I can't picture it.
I mean, here's the best,
Oh, no.
This is where I had a full panic attack. So Diane Keaton and I, she'd probably never remember me if you put me in a lineup, but what's so nice about her is, like, we had fun. I'm sure she has fun with her. She's fun. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So I'm sure she makes everybody feel welcome. Like, I truly had a very small part. Mm-hmm. So I was like one of the ladies that worked in the newsroom. But so I had a bunch of scenes. Like, there was like a bunch of us around. I played Stacy, one of the ladies in the news, like the morning show, whatever. And, but it was one of those things where you couldn't leave your mark. So, like, sometimes, like, in between takes, you just sit there. So you're stuck at the conference table.
Okay, yeah.
So to my right is fucking Annie Hall, and to my left is Han Solo. So Annie Hall and I start talking. It turns out we both loved Soup Plantation, which is shocking to me. Like, when did she ever go? Like, so we were discussing our love for Soup Plantation, how much we love Soup Plantation. And then I hear from my left, the only time he ever talked to me was, what is Soup Plantation? And then I panic, and I try to describe to Indiana Jones. I'm like, oh, it's like a discount, like, salad. Like, you can get coupons, but they have, like, a hot potato bar, or you can have, like, Jell-O or toppings. They have frozen yogurt, but it's like $7 or $12 depending if you have a coupon or not. It's like all you can eat. It's like a buffet. And I saw him falling back into his, like, Mr. Bird sarcophagus, just couldn't glaze over his regret of engaging me. Ever was so clear with me attempting to explain Soup Plantation.
It's not simple enough. I saw him at Baja Fresh once. I think that's as simple as it gets for him. I saw him eating a burrito at Baja Fresh.
Are you serious?
Like, yeah. Is that really him? Oh, yep. He's got the earring. Yep. That's absolutely him.
Wait a minute.
Him.
A little hoop. He had the little hoop?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a minute. So he was eating a burrito, not a taco. It was a burrito.
I think it was a burrito. I'm pretty sure.
Which Baja Fresh? Was it the one on Sunset near the Griddle?
It was in Brentwood. So it was.
Okay.
Yeah, that one. I don't know if it's still
there
or not.
At the Brentwood Soup Plantation, I one time saw Martin Landau.
Holy shit. Are you kidding me?
Which is who you would picture at a Soup Plantation.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
That's on brand. That's on brand for the brand.
Why do you go there, Martin? For the soups. Okay, that makes sense. Thank
you,
Martin.
Yeah, you're Martin Landau. And I feel like. I feel like this is the most name droppy.
It's fine.
Okay, here we go. When I don't want to name drop, but I did live in Zach Galifianakis's closet for 6 months, and it was me and him and his best friend Jody, who is before Zach was famous. I knew him from stand up in New York. I lived in his closet for a pilot season on an air mattress, and his friend Jody, who he used to call Al Baldo because he said he was a balding albino. And he called me Piggy Smalls or the Notorious P.I.G. because he thought I was small, but he couldn't believe how much I ate. So one day, we all loved Soup Plantation and we were poor. And one day we decided to go for lunch and then just eat our way through and stay till dinner.
Oh,
and I
feel
like this was at the Brentwood one. And I feel like that's when we saw Martin Landau together in the day.
That's so good.
Before the hangover. And then Zach shot off to the moon, never to be seen again.
Look, here's the thing. You lived in his closet. And
I did.
You have a career. I was an extra in the hangover, so that's really all
Were
I got.
Were you? Okay, yes. What scene?
A lot of the wedding stuff. I was mostly there, because you know what's funny? It's like, I'm there, if I were to ask anybody, I'm like, do you guys know, like, how fucking cool Ed Helms and Zach Galifianakis are? Nobody had any idea who they were. And I'm like, I'm just going to watch these two motherfuckers improvise. And it was just a joy to watch the two of those guys.
I always forget that Ed Helms is in that. I forget that.
Mm-hmm. I loved Ed Helms. I was just
I loved that movie. I know they're making a TV show. I love the one that he wrote, that the Falls. Aren't they doing a TV show of it?
Wait,
am I crazy?
One? Wait,
remember that one that he wrote that John C. Reilly was in, where it's in the motel and they go on the convention?
Cedar Rapids. Yes, they're making a show of that. Okay,
I think, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just conflating the two.
Here's the thing, though. Pilot season's insane. Anytime they mention, you know, there's always a million TV shows that get mentioned. That could have happened.
I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing some show for Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
They're filming.
Uh-huh.
And I think it might be similar to that movie, which I thought was so... I just remember John C. Reilly putting on the trash can, getting into the pool in the courtyard of the pool, and then pretending to be like R2-D2.
Yep. No, you're right. That does happen in that movie. That's very funny.
It is... that was a good movie.
I was going to ask you, because I'm realizing now I haven't seen your stand-up, so I apologize for that. But stylistically, can you describe it, and is it obvious? Is there any obvious trajectory from Steve Martin, or is it just an embedded influence in you?
I would say the trajectory is, and when it really helped me, I remember when I realized I could play a heightened version of myself that's almost like a character of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still the essence. It's not a lie, but it's like the... So my friend said that it's the... That I'm the kitty who got into the champagne bottle and Kitty Wants to Play. He is a much better, like, one-liner guy, okay? Mm-hmm. So he is much... And I'm much more physical.
Okay.
But I think there's this... I think we both have a sweetness and a playfulness.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a heightened character quality where... Mm. And I'm not super personal. I'm not super revealing. I'm not sitting there, like, you know, talking about ins and outs of my specific life or my family.
Sure, okay.
And...
That's what the book is for.
Which is actually interesting. I was like... Because I have never been that personal. So it's interesting to be like, here's everything.
Well, it's crazy, though, if only because that's it sounds like you're making it up. And I know you're not, but it's just the kind of stuff that sounds like you're getting ready to do your sitcom of your life.
I know.
And it's all of a sudden, it just wasn't in your act. And that's fascinating to me.
Well, I mean, honestly, that's what's so... I will tell you, it's been interesting, like, because my dad is such an interesting character. And it's actually why it was so fun to write the book.
Uh-huh.
There's something that happens when I tour where I think a lot of the people who come see me often know me maybe from Chelsea Lately. So it's a lot of ladies from Chelsea Lately, and they're protective of me. So a lot of – it's almost like the most friendly – like my heckler is not a mean heckler. It's a supportive heckler. So I'll do like a punchline where I'll – you know, whatever. I used to do a thing about how I made an – like I whatever. I made an error cutting bangs. It's this premise. And then, but so then – always, like, starting, setting it up, then I will always have someone be like, I like your bangs. Like, I have the most supportive comedy killers, okay? Like, the most supportive hecklers.
Amazing, okay.
And I found, my friend and I have talked about this, like, one of my best friends in comedy, who I used to host a show with in Brooklyn, Lisa Delarios, who I love.
Mm-hmm.
I would try to talk about my family, and I would try and talk about my dad. And I think it would make people sad for me on stage. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas on the page or maybe in a podcast, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something I think they get protective or worried about me on stage. And there's that I think it also sounds like a lie. Like it sounds so crazy. It's almost and in some ways it's almost so nuts that it's not relatable. Like, it's so crazy. Because in my mind, because everybody's like, I have tried so many times to bring in my dad as a character. You know, I'll talk a little bit about my parents marrying on a dare, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, like, you know, like how my parents married on a dare, you know, like, I mean, honestly, I haven't done my sentence, my reels. I've been doing like Zoom COVID things.
Yeah.
But everybody knows I didn't just get back from Vegas, so I'm just like it's all like I just make Zoom. Like I've been like the to me the beauty of a Zoom show. It's like you are to me. it's kind of fun to do all new. I mean, let's be real. Like, it's like I'm in my garage midday. Like, I'm not moving around. It's broad daylight. Like, you know, you all know. I've been cutting my own hair in my driveway for 3 months. Like, like there's a certain beauty to, like, let's see what the act is on here. But anyway, yeah, so it's, I did talk a little bit about my parents marrying on a dare, but it was an interesting thing of, like, figuring out how to get them into the act in a way that wasn't so crazy that people just blacked out.
Right.
Whereas if they're reading it, I think people are really enjoying it and relating. Like, you can really lead a horse to water. Like, you can really dole it out. And, like, on the page, it's constructed in a way. But it's been you know, and I've had friends who've, like, so we've worked on stuff. I'll go do it. They'll come watch. And they're like, yeah, like, people start to feel, they feel sorry for you, or it feels so, it's so crazy. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, we're all flying to the world in certain packages. Like,
sure.
And, like, so that has been, because I would like to do stuff about them. And yet, I think it's so nuts people can't relate.
Sure. No, I get that. No, and I'm glad, I'm glad it works on the page.
Yeah.
Because I've always wondered why people pick the persona they pick and then stick with, and, like, how much it's evolved, because people have, I mean, there's a million different ways to do it. There's Mitch Hedberg, who may or may not have been who he was, but it was definitely a character of some kind.
Yes.
You know, how close is a character you play on stage to the character you were in Psych? Because that's just a really good.
I would say pretty close.
Yeah.
I would say fairly close. I think it's friendly, a little bit of a fun train wreck, a little, like, leaps before she looks. Mm-hmm. I think it's, like, her enthusiasm's going to get her in trouble. And then I also like to see, like, to me, and the fun of doing a longer set is, like, once you kind of get them on your side, I have a dark sense of humor. So I also like to see, once I've won them over, I like to see how dark can I go. Like, can I deliver in some darker shit mid act and get away, like, this, like, you know, this little, like, meringue looking person. Mm-hmm. Can I get some, I like the switcheroo.
How dark, like, are we talking?
I mean, not super dark, but I like to get a little dark. And I think that it's, you know, it's the fun of, you know, I like a switch. I like the playing with the expectations. I'll tell you, and it's been an interesting thing. I've talked actually to a bunch of my female comedian friends, like, just as the world has been changing in the last few years, as far as, like, you know, so for many years touring, if most of the people that were buying the tickets, let's say they were Chelsea Lately, for instance, was the large half of the people, a lot of them are straight ladies who then the person who they're with a date. And so it was figuring out how to get these guys who may have never listened to a woman for an hour. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, and there's nothing, like, I'm not who they would imagine if they were going to go see it. Like, it's like figuring out how to engage them in a way that they will listen and not just check out for 50 minutes.
Right.
And I'm not particularly dirty. Sure. I don't talk about blowjobs. Like, I don't, like, so it was figuring out. So I found early on, I knew I could make the women laugh. I could make the gay gentlemen laugh.
Oh, okay.
The certain straight guys I could, but it was like the dates. It was always the dates.
Sure.
And so I found that because I started out as an improviser. And so Bobby Lee was so great when I started doing stand up more often. He was like, he always told me to record every set, listen back. And he would just say, listen to where they're laughing and you're not letting them laugh. Like, the audience will tell you how they like you. So listen to where you're not letting them laugh and lean into that and record your set. He's like, because you improvise a lot, so you can help build your set. You might make some off the cuff joke in the moment that you can then, like, record, listen back, try it again tomorrow night, and then build on that. And so, like, So I found one show. I just randomly started. I named one guy in the front. I was like, I'm going to call you Kirk. So I started with name people. I would like, and then mm-hmm. And I found, like, I touched him, and then, not on purpose, and then I realized I was, like, touching him, and I was like, then I was like, oh, may I touch you? So many lawsuits. So then it became, like, so then I started, like, naming the guy. So I had, like, I would have, like, Kirk and Dirk, and then I would just keep going to may I touch you? So many lawsuits, like, always, no matter what. And so if it was a more female-centered topic mm-hmm. that they might normally get start to zone out on. I mean, mm-hmm. I hate having guys don't have to think about this. Guys aren't worried yep. about if, but like that's unfortunately when you're and doing an hour, like you want to keep your whole audience with you. And I wanted yep. to make it fun for everybody. So it was trying to figure out like, and you also wanted the gals, you wanted the guys to think you were cute enough that they'll listen and the women to not be threatened by you. So they uh-huh. think that you're an idiot, you know, like you're a cute enough idiot. Mm. Like, but she's fun and we like her, but she's in her own way and that's fine. Yeah. And so there was something about like figuring out how to make it slightly playful, but not threatening yeah. and naming. So then I would have callbacks and by the end I have all these different people and I'm throwing like, you know that Gary. And like, so then the crowd knows and I've given Gary assignments of what Gary does. And like by the end, like there's a whole running storylines of me and some of the people in the crowd. And then I throw back yeah. to one I haven't thrown. But it was just an interesting thing of like, if I was just writing for the gals, that would mm-hmm. be, it was like the fun challenge of like, how do I make the whole crowd have fun? And I actually, it's fun. Like once I figured it out, it mm-hmm. actually became like a fun, I was like, oh my God, I cracked it.
You
know,
see that.
But yeah. For me and, you know, other people they have different energy and they probably don't need to manipulate like that. I don't know. But like it was more just self-preservation of yeah. and also wanting to be a good performer, knowing people paid for babysitters and it's right. it's, you know, they spent their money and it's a night out and they, you know, hired a sitter or their mom's watching their kid. Like you want everybody mm. to have a good time. So that was like the challenge of trying to figure it out. Like, and that's partially how the persona and the act got built. This was also like self-preservation.
I'd like people to listen to everything that you just described, and then I want you to picture how easy it is for a dude to get up there, tear the sleeves off his shirt, put on a fucking trucker's cap, call himself Larry the Cable Guy, and people will just be on board. And yet all the work you have to do just to get people to pay attention because you're a woman
yeah.
is just, people cannot deny that anymore. It's just like they need to listen to stories like that.
I mean, even in talking to a lot of women, like you have to pick out your outfit.
Right.
So you're cute enough that they'll watch you and think like they're cute,
mm-hmm.
but not so cute that it's threatening, like things like that. And mobile, yeah. that you can be mobile. Like it's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm sure the biggest women don't have to think. I'm sure they don't, you know, but that's the deal with mm-hmm. a lot of clubs and touring.
Yeah. Woof.
I know, because not every show is a fun Brooklyn show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not every show is in Portland. Not right. every show is in Austin. You know, like, let's be real. Like, who's yeah. paying your rent? And sure. but and it can be really fun, but it is an extra added element that I think guys don't necessarily have to think about at all. They just go in their jeans and their T-shirt. And mm-hmm. that's that.
You know, yeah. I often have this very, I hate when I do this. I hate when I pull this nostalgic bullshit. We're like, you know what? There aren't enough actors out there with triple threats nowadays. And then I sort of fucking forget. No, that's dudes. There's so much more work that has to be. I mean, you've already told me that you've done improv, sketch, stage, stand up. You've done
a book.
TV movies. You've written a fucking book. And this is all to, you know, just to get your shit out there. But I mean, it's a lot harder. It's a yeah. lot harder than a dude in your position would have to work.
Well, it's also, you know, when you think about every movie, uh-huh. all of my peers, like mm-hmm. every comedy movie. So like The Hangover,
mm-hmm.
10 parts for guys, 12 parts for
sure.
guys.
Sure.
There's very few, unless you're the girlfriend.
Right.
You know, sometimes Kristen Wiig gets stuff.
Sure.
You know, Molly Shannon sometimes gets stuff or like a mm-hmm. Kate McKinnon.
Sure.
But for the most part, you're the love interest.
Yep.
There's not all those extra smaller character actor parts for comedy women in movies.
And Bridesmaids comes out. Is it finally the year of the woman in movies? Well, maybe the year.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's, yeah. Well, you do.
And which was amazing. Yeah. And like,
sure, yeah.
But it is. It's interesting how it's like the amount of at bats. And like all the guys are like most of my. You know, I love all these. It's more sure. just the opportunity. It's the amount of opportunity that gets. That's disappointing. Like, and it's getting better. I think it's actually. I actually feel like it's changing because it has to change. Like, I actually think like in the last year or two, you look at like an Issa Rae, you look at like a Phoebe Waller-Bridge. You know, like people. Pen 15 is cool. Like, you look at all the. I think that female creators are really now. Like, they're giving them their chance.
Yeah.
And I think that there will be a big change because of that. And I'm hopeful. Yeah. And I actually think it is changing.
Well, there's a lot of consternation from nerds who are like, well, you know, they keep making the same movie over and over again. Well, okay. Yeah, that's true. Take some more chances. And that might not happen.
Yeah.
Take some more chances with who you let write, produce, direct, act in, you know, even co-star, even who you put as your fucking extras in your movie. You know, I've had friends like me, like I don't bust my ass to be an actor. If I get to act in something, I get to. Great. But I've had friends who are like, you know, now they just cast, you know, people of color in this part. So I can't work. And it's like, you've already done so much fucking work.
You've had a pretty good run. You've had
Can
a really
chill?
Good run.
And it's you'll every, still it's probably
how about,
be
how about
fine.
Let everybody else have a turn?
You'll still be fucking fine.
You're still like, fine. You've had you a know, good run.
If I thought it came down to myself and somebody of color or somebody queer or a woman in something that where I knew it was integral, I would happily step back. That might sound like a shitty move to somebody or a stupid move, but no, I'm doing fine. I'm not rich and I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't, whatever. I'm not, you know, what I'm trying to say, I'm very noble, Arden. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm very
yes,
noble
are,
and
Jason.
Very smart.
Yes,
very
you are, Jason.
I'm another
very
good
noble.
Man.
Thank
another you
good
so much.
Man. You're another good man. Jason, your mother's proud of you. You're another good man. You're doing it. He's a good man. He's a good boy. We love it, Jason.
What I'm trying to do is actively lose listeners, is what I think I'm doing.
Hi, listeners.
By
hello, we're back.
By saying what I actually feel.
I know. We're back.
So, why recommend this album in a couple sentences?
You know what? I would say recommend the album because, let's see, what is it, 42 years old?
Shit, yeah.
And to see somebody, to see somebody with a light touch do evergreen, like to watch a really fun, light, not heavy-handed wordsmith. To see a playful wordsmith, and you can see his magic training. You can see his sleight of, like, he does the switcheroo. He is an excellent magician, you know? You think it's going one way. You think you know which way it's going to go, and then he turns it. And to also see somebody who's got their character and their part down and is so delightfully playing many, like, just playing many different versions of it. And then the fun of hearing someone at the height of their fame, when you hear that crowd roar, when he takes the crowd through, when they all repeat back after him, and then the cheering, and then when he did the money thing where he did the accounting and then he said, I'm going to do one show and like goodbye forever, and then the crowd went batshit. That's when you're not like, the just hearing the level of fame that he was at when he recorded it, and that he chose to step away from this side of his career shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So like, this is him, and he's about to retire from this.
Yeah.
Whereas like a Jerry Seinfeld or like you know, other people are just never. He's about to never do this again, and he's so good at it.
Yeah.
And that, and he's about to be done.
Yeah.
He's to listen and be like, is he done yet? Like, is this killing him?
Is his soul hurting?
Because it started to feel like he was done.
Yeah.
Like, listening back after reading that book, and when he was like kind of, he knew he had to give him King Tut. He knew he had to give him Wild and Crazy Guy. And he did. And he made jokes about it. He honored like not. But when you hear about, and he's talking about doing it again and again, and his arrogant character, but the silliness, like, it's arrogant, but he's such a ding dong. Like, he's so likable.
Yeah.
It's a master magician who is at the top of his game, and he's so good at it that he does not ever need to do it again.
Yeah.
He's mastered the tricks. And It's amazing. That's why I say.
I feel like magician should be used more often in conjunction with talking about comedy. You know, it's obviously, yeah, we know he had an actual magic background, but it's an apt
comparison.
Well,
you can tell that this guy's a magician. You know what I mean? It's like listening to this back. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, that tracks. Mm-hmm. And you can see his delight at the sleight of hand and the timing of it and the precision. The precision, and that it's delicate and not snotty. It's silly. Right. It's so silly. but smart without being off-putting. It's not like, oh, he thinks he's better than us, like too intellectual. He actually is super intellectual in it, and he's playing dumb. Like he's playing smart dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a great album. I loved it.
I need to look something up because I've recommended this every time, but I keep thinking I'm getting the year wrong. So there was a gentleman who did a couple of recommendations. I'm an idiot. He did a couple of interviews that were in the 70s, and they were, well, fuck this. It's not giving me the year.
With Steve
Martin?
I think
it was 78. Well, with several different people. He was a local radio guy. I apologize for not remembering his name. I think he did the one with Monty Python, but he did one.
Oh, my future murder victim.
Yes, exactly right.
Great.
There's a record called, it's on record, called the Steve Martin Radio Hour, and it is just an interview with him about his process, I think, making this record.
All right, I'm writing that down right
now. It's hard to get, but I can tell you, I can send, if you look up Fuji Puzzle Box, that is a blog where a friend of mine rips and cleans up old records. He has it there for free.
Okay, oh my God.
It's hard to find, and it is... It's listening to him. It's listening to him middle of the shit he writes later on about in Born Standing Up. So it's him in the middle of the process, why he thinks a joke works. He's being sincere as far as I can tell.
I want to listen to that. What was so interesting reading his book was also, and this happened, it literally was like, I did this, I did this show in Aspen, I got a write-up, I did a show in San Francisco, I got a write-up, and then I played every stadium and I had to quit.
Yeah, right.
The leap was, it was like bounding over the Empire State Building, having just taken one step. Like, it was like, I did this one small club, I got this great write-up, and now I'm so large, I need to retire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not how
it's
it works
crazy.
Anymore.
I mean, I guess when, was it all from SNL?
Well, I mean, he was also on Smothers Brothers, and he was on Carson enough that, you know, that was back when, like, you're on Carson once and it makes your career.
Right.
Ask Drew Carey, I guess, the last man who that ever happened for. But
was he the last man that ever happened for?
That's what they say, yeah. Like, he was the last guy to get called over to the couch and then have a fucking sitcom the next day, basically.
Can I make a recommendation? I'm sure you've already read
this. Please.
But Joan Rivers' first book, Enter Talking, have you read it?
I haven't, actually, no.
It's so good. All right, she's written a bunch of books. She wrote a bunch of books. Mm-hmm. This, and I believe, if I recall correctly, because I read it a while ago, it ends right when she gets her Fox show, right before Johnny, like it's right.
Oh,
it was all about the Tonight Show, and it's like, it's so interesting that she was the daughter of this fancy doctor in Larchmont, New York. She wanted to be a serious theater actress. Mm-hmm. She was in class with Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
She considered herself a failure because she thought comedy, like, it almost said, like, even though she worked her ass off at it, it wasn't, she wanted to be a Broadway theater actress.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't the dream. Yeah. Even though she was lugging her recording equipment to, like, burlesque shows and doing it in her pearls and with strippers behind her. I mean, like, the determination, and then taking the train back to Larchmont to go, you know, in her pearls and calling herself ugly. Even though she was adorable.
Yeah.
Like, you see these pictures of her. She's just adorable. She called herself fat and ugly. It couldn't be cuter. But just the Carson. And then the second book is the heartache. And now Johnny, how she was host. She's doing the guest hosting. And then Johnny. And then never forgiving her, like never talking to her again. It was just, I highly recommend Enter Talking.
All right, I will have to read that one.
I recommend Little Miss Little Compton.
Yes. Where can we find it, Arden?
Thank you so much for asking. Literally anywhere books are sold. You can get it from my website, ardenmarine.com. Mm-hmm. If you want it with a cool free tote, you can get it from ardenmarinebook.com, M-Y-R-I-N. It's signed and comes with a cute tote.
Awesome.
But Chelsea Handler loved it. Amy Schumer loved it. Your friend Zach Galifianakis loved it. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun read. It's a fast read. I think it's a good read for the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we'll see it as a sitcom soon, right?
That's God. And I think that would actually, my dad would be a fun character.
Fuck yeah.
He would be great. I mean.
How old would he be when the show starts? What are we thinking?
Around
40,
you,
balding, with a beard and glasses?
He's shaped like a baby. I feel like it should be.
I can gain some pounds.
Because part of me, 40, balding, beard and glasses. We would have to pad you up about 40 pounds.
Okay, I can do that.
And
I'm eating nothing but junk food in the pandemic.
We'd have to get you a hammer, throw you in a pool, see how buoyant you are, like a witch. Are you going to be? Are you going to burn? We're going
to
burn you.
Down to do it. Yeah, absolutely fine. Yeah.
I mean, we got to get you into a Mazda Miata. Mm-hmm. We need to get you some vanity plates, and I think we got to get you a nice man purse and never hydrate you again with actual water.
Yep.
I think you might have a future there, Jason.
Perfect.
What a delight you are. Look at all the people you've interviewed.
So
how long have you been doing this podcast?
In February, it will be 10 years. So, yeah. So that's...
What's your audiobook that you're editing?
I'm editing... it is not one of my books, although I am working on that next. It is an educational book. So that is Yeah, it's fun. It's boring to read. It's 101,000 words. So reading... Did you do the audiobook for your book?
I did.
Okay. How many words is your book?
My book is like 70,000 words.
Did it kill your throat? Because
it was really tiring, and they made me do it like they were really delayed with like the contracts and everything for that. Mm-hmm. So it was like the week before. I mean, I was doing a lot of press, like just leading up the week before, and they're like, "Oh, you need to record the." I'm like, "What?"
Oh,
so I had two all nighters. I did two all nighters as an adult. That's hard.
Yeah.
And there's a woman in New York that was like directing me.
Oh, so you're doing it remotely. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And because I didn't want to go to a booth. I was like, I don't trust actors. I'm not getting COVID for my.
No.
Anyway, I have a podcast. This is a soundproof. This is not wallpaper. That's all soundproof. This fabric is padding.
That's amazing.
Thank you. It's an old garage. I soundproofed it.
So good.
Thank you. And it was so. I was worried I was going to lose my voice. Yeah. I had to keep drinking throat coat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. I was grateful that I'm a stand-up in that.
Mm.
I'll say I have a very specific voice, and this is my natural voice. I've always sounded like this. Mm-hmm. And one of the other challenges, everybody flies into the world in certain packages. This is a certain voice to listen to for an hour or a couple hours for a book. And so I know from doing stand-up that I've learned I have to modulate, like, pick and choose. I have to get quiet sometimes. I have to get like, this isn't that your ear can't listen to this voice for 70,000 words. Like, so I was thankful that I had toured and learned, like, I gotta like direct myself and really switch it up because it's too high and piercing.
That's awesome.
It is. I mean, it's the same tone as a pound key. Like, it'll go message erase. Whenever I call people, numerous times a week, I'll be mid-thing, I'll get excited, and then it'll go message erase, because it's the same tone as a pound sign.
It's so unfair.
It's a nightmare.
That is so unfair.
And then it's also, like, if I don't know somebody that well, and then it looks like I have to, like, call back, like, it's fully... What's his name in Swingers? It's fully like Jon Favreau calling Heather Graham Swingers over and over. Like, God, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
I have not seen that in a...
I will rewatch it. But, you know, I loved it when I was a 20-something dude. And I'm fairly sure... The main characters are very toxic dudes,
but who cares?
Was it made with that self-awareness? I'm not sure.
I don't give a shit. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
Look. I can watch.
If it's funny, I get that, you know.
Look, I mean, yeah, I'm sure they're toxic dudes. I'm sure there's parts of it that are cringy. But like, okay, I'll time travel back and take off my Time's Up hat and just laugh and enjoy. Vince Vaughn, I mean, he was a star. Are you kidding me? He's fantastic in it. Oh my God. Also, I just rewatched Bottle Rocket. Those Wilson brothers, just like, they were stars.
Yeah.
You'd never seen a character like Digby. Like, it was just like, they were, those that time, like, was like, they were great.
Here's how bad I was, though. Talk to me. I had a nickname at the Dresden. That's how much I loved Swingers.
When I came out here, my friend and I,
oh, I love Marty.
You went to the 101 Cafe.
Yep.
You went to the Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
You went to
Lounge.
Yeah, Lava Lounge. And then there was that one that just closed near the vacuum store. The Asian themed one that was so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to all those. I was a little too young to have seen them in their heyday, but when I came out here, you know, we visited them as many of them were dying. Although I hope the Dresden's still around.
The Dresden's still there.
So, you know, as long as that's still there. Hey, guys, welcome to Swingers Talk.
Hey, guys.
I'm sorry.
Who was the fourth swinger? Wasn't there another swinger?
Ron Livingston is and then there was one of them.
But then there was somebody else.
Oh, my God. It's not him. Jesus. No, couldn't tell you. I'm so sorry. You know,
I'm going to look it up as we leave. I'm going to look it up right now.
Please do that.
And I'm going to see if you can guess.
Oh, no, I won't guess. I can't remember his name. I cannot.
I feel bad for the guy.
My friend and I, he had me reenact the scene with the gun in a parking lot, but just with fingers. He had to have.
Oh, you loved it.
We also went around to Back to the Future locations and did this.
I'm not mad at that. Okay. Patrick Van Horn.
Wait a minute. Okay, that might be the other gentleman. That could very well be the other gentleman.
Let me look at this man.
There are people who are bigger fans than I am who are screaming at their...
It is. It was Patrick Van Horn. That's who it was. There we go.
Well, everybody needs to read your book.
Yes. Little Miss Little Compton.
Is the audiobook out now?
It's coming out, I think, next week.
Next week. Okay, so pick up the audiobook, too. Why not?
Read it and have her say... There's a lot of fun photos in the actual print book. I will say, you get some gems. There's like 25 funny photos in the print book.
That's amazing.
Everybody loves a photo.
Of course. I'm going to very quickly just tell everybody my documentary, Lords of Soaptown, which came out a few years ago, is on Vimeo now, I'm told. Don't know how much it cost. They didn't tell me it was happening. So I just found that out randomly.
Yay!
And also, this Saturday, as you're listening to this, this Saturday, I'm in Young Frankenstein, a drinking game. I'm going to be playing Inspector Kemp. So
yes, you are.
Yeah, it's going to be. That's why I'm growing out these chops. That's what I say. That's why I'm growing out the facial
hair. Dr. Frankenstein.
That's going to be such a good show. So much fun, guys. Well, that is about it. Arden, thank you again so much for joining the show.
Jason, nice to meet you.
Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Undress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!